drawings there and you'll be fine. I'm serious, dude. Today, was anybody at the last conference that just, the last talk that just happened? I see, besides me and Ingo. You got, okay. The EPUB one. Because we beat them to it. We actually have full EPUB manuals being rendered. So, but it was a while ago, too. I just didn't even know that EPUB was written in XHTML, but apparently it is. So we've been supporting EPUB, unbeknownst to everybody, for a year now, something like that, is how long we've been doing it. XHTML. Yeah, I know, but the actual files themselves can be used for it. Yeah, you got to put the book spines and all this stuff. We'll show some pictures of that later. But actually, the in OpenBSD Mandoc can do EPUB files. Awesome! I didn't even know this. So, anyway, let's get started. What do you think? I really like when people give comments during conferences. I'm used to kind of interacting because I usually, give lectures, and I expect that nobody has any idea what I'm talking about. And if they don't ask, they will increasingly know less and less of what I'm talking about, until it's just me, and I might as well not talk at all, which actually has happened. For this presentation, I spent about half the time just finding this picture, so the rest of it is not as neat as this. So this is pretty much the high point that you're seeing right now. And this is actually a picture of an oxen with the carts. And I don't remember the full title of this seminar or lecture, but it had to do with oxen drawing carts, and it was a metaphor too. Something. But I just like the picture, so let's just jump into it. I actually am looking forward to doing this, because we have a lot of goodies to show off that have been worked on in the past few months in terms of really doing interesting things in Unix manuals that people have talked about doing for about 10 years, but nobody's actually done before. And we're going to show you actually how that looks when it's done in practice and done properly. And also to show you some things that we're doing probably totally not properly at all, but we do have them done. And what took Groff about 10 years to do, we at least started to hack in a solution to over the past few days. And now we have something to show and also slides that show things like Japanese language manuals, which we now support the input and output for, in HTML modes, in ASCII mode, or UTF-8s on terminals. And if we extend the logic, you'll be able to search in Japanese through Unix manuals for certain characters. I don't know if I can actually show that part working together, because I just finished the output this morning, and I would have to run some magic, but you'll be able to follow the logic in your minds. And again, if you guys have any questions, please let me know during. All right, so the structure of this talk is basically going to be about 50% talking about Mandoc, and the rest of it divided into talking about Unix manuals in general, and also the formats that these manuals are written in, of which there are quite a few, more than you might think. And during this conference, I've noticed a lot of people talking about things like EPUB, and as I mentioned, a docbook, and other things that all relate to documentation. There was a conference seminar, whatever, today about writing books, which also segues into this because, of course, book formats and everything are relevant. So there's been a lot of talks about documentation, about manuals, about formats, and that makes me pleased because I just love this kind of boring stuff that most people don't. So this makes me really pleased. So just for a quick survey, who has written a Unix manual ever? Wow. Okay. Who wrote it in MDoc? You suck. in MDoc, the format. Yeah, okay. So who's written manuals in MAN? All right, who's written in ME? You wrote in ME. What about MM? The original. I think it was the first macro package. Okay. Well, what about pure Roth with no macro packages whatsoever? Have you actually written one in pure Roth? I've never seen a manual in pure Roth, and I'm dying to have an example just to show what you should never, ever, ever do. Oh, all right. Did it work, or is this you're talking about Werner Lemberg or something? Yeah. What did they choose instead? Oh, all right. Oh, so a step in at least the right direction. they're similar. So what about DocBook? Who has actually written something in DocBook? Ooh. Yeah, also, what about other formats? Can anybody name, does anybody know of any, besides TechInfo, because that's not really, it was written in TechInfo, in GNUs, or, no, TechInfo, no, TechInfo. What about anything else? Like for a Unix manual, just out of curiosity, maybe somebody knows of a format that just I have no idea about. Ooh. Lout? Know about that one. I mean, I do know about that one. I'm just not going to mention it in this talk because it's not relevant. Oh, yeah, and Pod. Right, yeah, so ProPod also. Okay. And of course, README is pretty much everybody's written a README. Has anybody written a README instead of writing a manual? Okay. All right, so I also ask because. Yeah. So. As long as it's not to me, I'm totally fine with that, all right? As long as it's to JMC, I'm very happy with this. Done. I agree with this part. Okay, because I like to point fingers as I'm doing things, and a lot of them are going to be pointed over there. All of them good, though, don't worry. Like, the bad example. All right, so you've reformed. Yeah. Actually, I'm going to talk about this too. It's kind of interesting because, part of the point of this entire conference piece, seminar, lecture, whatever it's called, is kind of highlighting that Unix manuals are really good in some places and really bad in others. And this is kind of a problem. As anybody, another show of hands, who develops software here? Pretty much everybody. Who has really at one point been so pissed at a library or whatever because they have shitty manuals? Yeah. And this is really important because everybody has experienced this. I think, but what's the worst one, do you think? Open that, yeah. Well, what about others? Xlib. Huh? Didn't they just import that too? Oh, so they're all fixed by now, right? Oh, who's done Xlib programming? And actually tried to use the manuals for Xlib instead of looking on Google. Yeah. Yeah, what did you do pre-Google? It's like, Yeah, but it's really a problem if you think about how many hours you've wasted because a library or something like that just has had bad manuals. I mean, they're really important, but we don't think about them that much. Oh, yeah, okay, Pam. I've actually done this also at one point. I started, and then was like, no, I'll just use the regular PHP often. Not have Linux supported at all. So I'll try to incorporate just this general notion that manuals are much more important than we really consider them in terms of the corpus of available materials on them, books, programs, this sort of thing. And it's not just sad, it's actually a problem. So one more show of hands. Who uses FreeBSD? FreeBSD people. All right, I'm going to be pointing more fingers over there because this is FreeBSD manuals are somewhat contentious. Of course, Linux is off the charts in terms of not being so great, but in writing these tools, we looked at a lot of manuals, and of the BSDs, I noticed that there was kind of a disappointing lack of information in the FreeBSD manuals, and that's a major problem for somebody like me who tries to develop software that works on all of these BSDs, and I just don't have the information I want. And thus, FreeBSD might get left out. But I'll go into specifics later. And I can't point fingers at the right people because they're not here, but I'll just point in the air or something. So I'll start out with just Unix manuals. We all kind of know what they are, right? So this on the left side is the terminal output, and this is the most familiar. We run man, and it shows this. And on the right side is a cleaned up HTML output that this tool, it's the same manual. So we can have manuals in different formats. They all kind of look the same, as you notice. I wonder if anybody's actually asked the question of why manuals look like this, but I'll answer it anyway for you today. It was pretty interesting to find out. But this is, for all intents and purposes, what Unix manuals mean. I'm not talking about papers you could write. I'm talking about GUI stuff, which is really an interesting question. How do you document GUI behavior in a standard way? You don't. I have no idea how either. You don't even go to Google anymore. You go to YouTube, and that's where you document your... He's getting more evil as this. Before it was Facebook, now it's like go to YouTube for your documentation. It's like bad. So this is what I mean by Unix manuals. In the earlier talk, a lot of talk about documentation was mentioned, and this does not refer to documentation in the sense of the FAQs or your handbooks or readmes or any of this other stuff. It doesn't have to do with that. This has to do with man and then a word after that, and what we see from there. And most of you probably know, but what man is doing is it's digging around to try and find the page that has either been formatted or has not been formatted, must be, that's in a language that's used to describe these manual pages. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Also, is the format of those languages, and why to use some, why not to use others. So I'm going to start, just to put things in context with the history, pretty much going from, I think this is an 11? It's either an 11 or a 7. Yeah, I think it's a 7. It's a PDB 7 up until modern day HTML output of Mandog, which looked better than anything else in terms of manuals. I'm also going to use this opportunity to bash on Groff a lot, and if there are people who work for Groff secretly who are here to spy on me, I apologize in advance. But I think that some of the people here who work on Mandog and really daily have to read a lot of Groff's manuals or source to figure out how it works deserve to do that. It's like we have to let go every once in a while. So let's start at the very beginning in 1964. Your manual formats are actually from 1964. This was a crazy discovery. I always assumed they came from like the 80s or something like this, or 70s at the latest. But in fact, the format in which we write manuals derives from the format called Runoff, which is developed for CTSS in the 60s. This is actually before people were walking on the moon. That is how long ago. I mean, that kind of blows my mind when I first found this out, because in fact, some of the invocations that they have in these manual formats are the same as what we use even today. I mean, it literally, well, it's somewhat changed, but the macros are the same. And I'll explain later in this conference, seminar, whatever, what the macros are. What even that means in the first place. But basically, the beginning of the Unix manual is 1964, which was a long time ago for some of us. That would be myself. Runoff, in all capitals, became Runoff in all lowercase for Multics, actually, after that. So it was rewritten in the Multics assembler and then rewritten in for Unix for the PDP 7.11, also in assembly in the 70s, very, very early 70s. So somebody picked it up, it was rewritten, but it was always in assembler, it was kind of kicking around from here to there. But I think Runoff was the first version that was used very heavily to generate things like books and longer manuals and this sort of thing and documentation. So, Runoff way, way back in the day. The first time we really know about Unix manuals as a solid thing, you know, what is a Unix manual, was 1971. When our friends here, Thompson and Ritchie, put out the Unix Programmer's Manual for the first edition Unix. So that's where things really start. And as we'll see in a second, the format, when you run man ls or whatever, what you're seeing on that page, the sections, you know, everybody's familiar with name, ls, description, this, and all this sort of stuff. That was laid in the, this is where you first have that appear. And exactly it says what the format is, what underlining means, what bolding means, this sort of thing. From November 3rd, 1971. I suspect, and actually having read this document, that they came up with this beforehand because it's very solid, and it's got the sound that like this has been taking a few years to go over. Yeah, before this is what when you read this document, it's kind of obvious that this has already been going through several reversions. And actually, we'll see later in looking at the 6th edition Unix, it hasn't changed at all, which further leads me to believe so. Probably from before 71, but this is the first public record I have of all the sections being listed in 1971, and not just the sections in the manual, but, you know, where did this come from? Man 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Has anybody ever thought where the hell these sections come from? Really? Well, now you know. So this is the sections, actually, come from, or, you know, probably before this, but were actually first documented in the first edition Unix manual. And that's where we get things like Section 1 manuals, right there. And as you know, this was before C, so they didn't really have a library function. They had subroutines, ostensibly for Fortran, I guess. Special files refers to devices. File formats is you know, what we still have today. So this really hasn't changed, again, in what is now almost 40, it is 40 years. All right. User-maintained programs, as I recall, refers to programs that are not part of the distribution, but are basically user local in OpenBSD terms. Of course, now it's games. So basically, nothing's changed in that regard. Now, miscellanea, that also hasn't changed, Section 7. What we don't see here is Section 8 or 9 yet. And the kind of other weird sections that we have, like Section N. There's a Section N. We have the Section X11, Section 3P, 3F, and all this sort of stuff. But I'll get into that later. And then, this is really hard to read. This is actually the original, I think it was Osana's copy of this document. This is scanned in from his. So they have like a cleanup OCR version, but I thought it would look a little bit cooler and retro to have the original documents here. So this is a TIFF version of the scan, of the picture, or whatever, of the original documents, of the copy of the original documents from 40 years ago. So here we have saying that right before this, it says every manual should consist of the following: the name section, the synopsis section, description, files, diagnostics, buns, I guess. the bun, I like my version better. Buns, the bug section, and the owner, which became authors later. And we have, you know, underlining or literal square brackets for the actual options. So this is where all that came from. And it was really interesting to me to read this and kind of discover, wow, you know, wow, this really went back a long way, and it wasn't one guy who kind of one day was like, you know, I should write this down, which is what I always assume because it seems really chaotic to me. Interestingly enough, this is a better reference than anything that has followed since then. So when I started writing my first Unix manuals, if I had had this, they would have looked a lot better. But I didn't. I had like MDoc samples or something like this, which I probably read the first few lines to and was like, copy. I'm guessing most people still do that today. I'm not going to look in the audience because I don't want to see the shame in your eyes. See also, of course, all that. So this, you know, what we read here is what we're still doing today. So this convention, this kind of standard, we could call it de facto, really has withstood the test of time. I mean, its docbook just came at the last minutes in comparison to this. Now, it's really been around for a long time, and that should give us pause, because something that has survived that long either sucks so badly that we're too shocked to do anything about it, or it's good enough, and I think this is definitely good enough. It really captures the things that we want to document in our Unix manuals, or commands, or file formats. It says it quite nicely. There's room for improvement, but we'll talk about that later. So let's continue this kind of biblical rendition of what's going on. Roth begat and Roth and Troth in 1973. These were rewrites in PDP 11 assembler, and they were just to take advantage of local hardware, basically. And Roth was good for screens, for kind of fixed width and this sort of thing. I may have these backwards. And Troth was much better for printers that could do a little bit more advanced work. And to this day, we still have Roth and Troth. And to this day, they still produce output that is, one is intended for one kind of medium and another for the other. Typeset runoff. All right, yeah. The names are, yeah, they're, Ditroff is my favorite, just because it doesn't make any sense to me. We'll get to that in a minute. Right, so Roth and Troth were developments of Roth that, huh? Yes, but it's my favorite name. And it's actually the most important one, in terms of, you know, keeping itself in the tradition of Unix and being portably written. So what followed that is the great one, which was the Unix one written in C. So this is when we have a nice abstract language, you know, very abstract high-level language of C, and Roth and Troth were rewritten in that language for Unix in 1975, along with, I should note, by the way, before I jump into this guy, the Unix Programmer's Manual was written in Roth, with Ed, it specifically says I was written in Rolf in a, not a macro package, but Rolf. So this kind of frightens me. I mean, I wonder how this document actually looks in its original, but none of them survive, unfortunately. It was way back before the great floods. So this was written for the 6th edition of Unix in 1975. And surprisingly, the information is the same, except for we have more sections. Specifically, we have one more section. So again, we have command system called subroutines, which will later become library functions, special files, which will later become devices, file formats, and conventions. So the conventions was added in there. User-maintained programs, which, of course, games. Section 7 became user-maintained subroutines. And obviously, this didn't last because we still use it as miscellaneous today. So somewhere along the line, this was reverted. I'm not sure, of course, when that happened. Probably look up yourselves. Because I know that the 7th edition is also available, but I didn't want to bore you too much. A little bit, but not too much. Maintenance is in there. Maintenance, of course, will later become the system binaries. And I think Section 9 is still kind of not standard. What's that? Yeah, it's everybody does kernel stuff, but it's not standard quite yet. It's not even really conventional. But we can talk about that stuff later. So actually, 7 years passed until we had another kind of spawn of the Rolf tradition. That was DITROF. And DITROF was really important, actually, because it's device independent, meaning NROF and TROF are each designed for a particular backend in mind, for a particular formatter, rather. I mean, an output media formatter, whether it's a typewriter or some sort of nice, you know, can make splines and this sort of stuff media. DITROF kind of shoved these together and actually made one binary be able to go into either format. So this is really important, not just for that, but for the fact that it gave birth to Grof. So Grof started, actually before the 1990s apparently, is when people started to take DITROF and to basically rewrite it in C++ for the GNU projects. And this has become the overwhelming Rolf system that we use today. There are a couple of others that we'll also talk about later, but this is the one that's used just overwhelmingly. Until now, of course. So you could probably, until recently, you could log into any Unix system, and you would be more or less assured that you would have Rolf in there. At some point. Some systems still use their own trough. I think namely Sun still uses their own trough, which nobody uses. They immediately dump a grof. But for the most part, you would get grof. And it's a GNU tool. And we'll actually talk about grof in a somewhat negative way later, for very good reason, too, especially as FreeBSD is concerned. The new grof is in GPLv3, which is somewhat interesting. Old grof was in GPLv2. It's still in C++, and the source archive is still, I think, 15 megabytes. Source archive is still 17 megabytes. This you probably don't know about. Somebody wrote a Rolf reader in awk. So if you guys think you're masochistic, I'm pointing over here, you're just wrong, man. And this guy, he even wrote, "I can't really believe I wrote this in his announcement." This was probably right before he went insane. Or probably a little bit after, because he, went insane right in the first place. Yeah, he does. I noticed that only after I posted this. I was like, the guy who took Rolf and ported it to awk works in the zoology department? I mean, none of this makes sense. This guy's obviously a genius. If he's still around, you should hire him immediately. Really? I don't know. I think this is crazier. Just the awk part. Because I looked at the source code briefly. I laughed, and then I put it away. You can download it, actually. It's all there. I think it was originally posted to Usenet. And then some equally insane person rewrote it, calling it cough. He rewrote it in C. From Minix, apparently. And I can't find a lot of information about this. I know the guy's name is listed on there, but his site is not working or something like this. So this is a bit mysterious. Minix apparently uses what I'm going to talk about, uses Mandoc now. But again, this is, nobody really knows. I don't know of any Minix people. Does anybody know any Minix people? It might be worth contacting them to see what they still use. Huh? Again? Like recently? Yes. Actually, we can demonstrate the issue with that also. But from what I understood, since the 2000s, they switched over to COLF, which was a reimplementation of something written in awk. It's just crazy. But people are crazy in the world. Some people even hack on NFS. I don't know. The world is a crazy place. Nothing on the slide whatsoever, or the backwards. Okay, so, and then nothing happened for about 40 years, and then in 2008, which is just 2 years ago, somebody had to rewrite it yet again. That was me, in C, and starting completely tabula rasa, writing it, and I'll talk a little bit more about the history of it, sort of. This is the first message I wrote. It was OpenBSD MISC, I believe. And I think it was followed quite quickly by people saying, this sucks, and we never want to use it. At least it was on other mailing lists. But I got the last laugh. Mandoc was originally called MDocML, so there's still some confusion as to what MDocML is and Mandoc is. They're the same thing. MDocML is because originally... this has almost become embarrassing, but I originally wrote Mandoc because the HTML output of Groff was really awful, and I wanted pretty manuals on my web page because I'm vain and I like when all of my web pages are pretty. And it wasn't pretty because I couldn't use CSS, and it just enraged me to have a nice looking, introduction to my project and then have these disgusting manual pages in fixed font, text output into Colby right under the page. It really pissed me off. So I originally wrote it to take the MDoc and just directly transform it into HTML, and then prodded by somebody over here in the corner who said, you know what, you should also do that for the terminal too. And I said, there's no way in hell I'm going to do this for the terminal also. About 2 weeks later, I did it for the terminal also. And as Ingo can very well attest to, I have a long history of saying, there's no way in hell I'm going to do what I'm doing 2 weeks later. And this happens a lot with Mandoc, and hopefully with other things also. If the things I say I will do, then I never do. So that's a basic history. Ingo, actually, in the next presentation, which I strongly urge you all to go to, is going to talk more about Mandoc as it's used in OpenBSD, and he'll talk a lot about the history and development of Mandoc itself, including areas of me going, no way am I going to do this. So let's move on to formats, unless anybody has any questions thus far that they want to air, or they're completely confused and have no idea what I'm talking about. Done. So how do we get from this file on the left to this file on the right? I mean, the actual file format is central to this all. I mean, tools come and go, but the format is what's really important, as we all know from the, this Office debacle that's gone on recently with Word and MSO, whatever. The format is really important. So let's talk about that a little bit. Because most people here have written a manual at some point. I won't be talking to an audience that is completely, or emailed to JMC and have him write it. You kind of know what I'm talking about. The Rolf language is actually really interesting. It is actually Turing complete. And I wrote a little, it took about 15 or 20 minutes to write the proof for that. It's not that interesting. It is also context sensitive. The grammar, who knows what the word context sensitive grammar means, or the term, in automata theory. So basically what this means is that it's not easy, it's not really easy to write a parser that can understand Roth. It takes a little work. And I'll actually go exactly into what that reason is. It's context-free, except for some very specific things that just screw everything up. And in my experience, that is like the story of Roth, is that it's really nice and easy until there are some things that just make you want to go totally nuts. And I'm not going to talk about those because I'll get upset. Yeah. I also heard somebody snort when they laughed right now, by the way. Yeah. So Rolf has four things that just make it like any other language, like PostScript, my other favorite language. We have variables that are sort of typed. We have looping. We actually have looping in your manual. You can write loops in your manuals. It's that awesome. Conditionals you can have that are actually used fairly often. And the most important part are the functions. I'm just using the word functions because there's no real terminology. We call them macros or requests fairly often. but I'll go into what the difference is later. Let's go over each one of these quickly. In your manuals, you can have variables. So variables can either be numbers or strings. So, for example, even in MDoc, in my manual, we have one variable that's used, just so that we don't have to write historic ROP only everywhere, because there are a lot of things that we found that have been deprecated about 100 years ago that people still do all the time. So we really wanted to say, don't use these ever. So we have a special symbol that we use in our manual, because over and over and over ago, we wanted to say, you know, don't use this, it's for historic ROP only. So the two types of variables are string variables, and also you can have numbers, numerals, and these can be scaled. So we use this for things like fonts. If you want to scale up a font or scale it down, or loops, you know, you also use these, and we call them registers. So we have string variables and registers. And this is actually what they look like. I didn't say this, but because of course it seemed natural to me, it probably doesn't to anybody else, but unlike C or whatever, ROP is structured as such. If you have any sort of command, which is called a request, then you have a period at the beginning of it. Of course, it's a simplification because it's not just a period. You can also have an apostrophe. You can have a period followed by white. I mean, this is what I mean by things that piss me off. But for all intents and purposes, you have a period followed by two or three letters, sometimes one letter, sometimes four, that are the command you're going to run. So this is pretty much how it looks. And some people find this cryptic. I will later demonstrate DocBook, and you will see that the alternative to this is so ugly that you will run back to this and just be like, oh, it's so nice and easy. And to me, it makes perfect sense. I mean, you've got the dots. It's easy to pick up in Vi or whatever and saying that this is a command. And then if you don't have that, it's just freeform text. It's interpreted within the scope of whatever's happening with your commands. So we have variables. Looping, I couldn't actually find a loop that's used in any of the manuals. Well, I found one, but it's not that important. So nobody really uses looping, but we have loops. They're while loops. Conditionals are used all the time. And I believe that this one right here is used for synopsis formatting. But that's not important. And functions, of course, are the most important thing. And this is actually going to segue into the most important part of this talk about what file formats are available for us to use. We don't use ROF anymore. We use sets of macros that are defined by ROF. So we don't actually have to program in ROF anymore. We program using these macros. But in fact, behind it is this just gobs and gobs and gobs of ROF code. So you can consider that you're running your manuals through a preprocessor that takes those dot and then two letters and just transforms them into gobbledygook, like this. So who has ever written like a name or an address inside of a manual? You know, you have AN and then the name of an author. Well, you can also do an address, like their email address. This is actually what that looks like. Yeah, this is the macro for AD. So this is what it is expanding that into internally. So this is why it's nice that you have these macro packages and not ROF, or else every time you would write a manual, you would also have to write this. Or every time JMC would be writing a manual for you, he would have to write all of this. So the macros are really great. They're a really nice advantage. And if you consider that this is coming from 1964, that was a good foresight. There are three main macro packages that were put out over time, just kind of worked on. There's really no standards body that's behind this. It's just people who are writing manuals who get tired of doing the same thing over and over again, try to make it simpler or more complicated, seemingly at the same time. And these came out in 1971, 75, and in 1992. The first two are ME and MAN, and of course we know some people have written them. Linux primarily uses MAN, unchanged from 1975. They actually make it uglier than that by using a lot of ROF in it too, but we'll get to that later. All the BSDs, in theory, use MDoc, which was done in 92, and it first came out in 4.4 BSD, although apparently in 4.3 BSD is where we first saw it. It was in 4.4 where we can find the copyrights relating to. So from quite some time ago. So these, when I say a macro package, I mean something that is hiding away all that complexity of ROF into some more or less simple macros. And as you might be guessing, one of the problems with more or less simple macros is that if somebody wants to do something interesting, They can't use the macros. They have to go back to the original RAW. So for those really, those great manual writers, those fantastic people who want to render things in blue in their manuals, and these exist, I guarantee it, I've seen it, then they go back to the original RAW and try to make blue. And yes, there are manuals where things are in blue. And I'm completely serious. So let's look at two examples. And we're not going to really go through it because it's kind of boring. This is a man macro manual. And as I mentioned, you have the period followed by the name of the macro, and then maybe it has arguments, maybe it doesn't. And you can kind of see, just looking at it, what refers to what. We have the sections, SH stands for section, and then the name of those sections. We have a PP, is paragraph mark. B stands for bold. So obviously what this is doing is really, like HTML, it's annotating the presentation of the document. So we say that man is a presentational language because it's all it's doing is telling you how to show things on the screen. It's saying it should be bold, it should be Roman, italic, all this sort of stuff. So man is very simply a presentation language. MDoc, on the other hand, looks completely different, doesn't it? We don't have any of that garbage. All we have here is macros that correspond to semantic information. So instead of telling us how to show stuff on the screen, the MDoc macros say what is following it, and it leaves it to Rolf and to translate these, NM stands for the name of what your program is, to take that NM and translate it to bold, italic, whatever. So MDoc is kind of, it's actually really interesting because it's completely different than man. Instead of saying what or how to format it, just saying, here's what I want to do, and go ahead and do it. And of course, this is from the LS manual that was listed earlier, and we're all very familiar with this. None of us have actually read the whole thing. Who has actually read the whole LS manual? You've actually read the whole thing? I only get through like the first one. It goes on really, really far down. This is to G. And I think it actually is hexadecimal in terms of its arguments. So there are a lot of them. Yeah, and what we have on the left, it's really not that scary. People think writing manuals is a hugely scary affair. I worry about those people's code, actually, because this is not that complicated. And compared to C code, or worse, Perl, if you have trouble with MDoc, you should really consider the liberal arts. So thus far we've covered, this is kind of radio in terms of the year that it was done. We have, starting with runoff, and rough, we kind of go outward into trough, rough, it sounds like I've got problems with speech, ditrough, off, rough, cough, and then mandoc. Yeah. Just, I had to make a difference. Yeah, it should have been moth or something like this. Or like mom off would have been even better. That would have been great for jokes. I know you're already thinking of them right now. I'm not going to go there. So these are the Roth clones, basically. And in some way or another, they all read Roth stuff, whether it's the macros or whatever. Doesn't matter how. Those are all doing it. So these are the clones. And then we have the completely, totally different things that were introduced, starting actually in the 90s. DocBook and Linux Book and all the other books and tech info. I left PerlPod out of here because we can talk about it later. It's really not that interesting. It's just man, but looking slightly different than man. And I think that was in the 90s also. But we can, like I said, talk about it later. Yeah, tech info is what's used for GNU info. So everybody has been annoyed at some point by typing man on a Linux machine and saying, look at info for this. Then you run info and you keep on hitting Control C and nothing happens. Has anybody ever?
You
type
the info page, you actually get the man page again.
Yes. Yeah. So here's a more important question. Who knows how to, not you, Ingo, who knows how to navigate info pages? Yeah, so of the people who are kind of going, how many times have you looked at an info page and you've still not been inspired to learn how to navigate the info? Yeah, me too. Yeah. And if you're like the rest of us, you just open the info page in Vi or whatever and you look at it that way. It works a lot better. And it's probably a lot faster, too. So let's talk about it. This is not the point to bash these, although I would like to. We could do a whole presentation later where I just do that. DocBook is kind of interesting. It's pretty much born out of standards committees. '91, it was probably before this, because it's based on the ML things, like SGML and all this sort of stuff. But 1991 is where we see the first standards document put out about DocBook by O'Reilly and somebody else. And I just wrote O'Reilly because it's more recognizable, but there are other people involved in this too. It says O'Reilly. Yeah, because it went from O'Reilly into OASIS eventually. And OASIS, of course, is the standards committee. Along the way, it went from being SGML, which is an unreadable language, and XML, which is an unreadable language. So nothing really has changed that much there except for end quotes or something. There's also a simplified DocBook, which is DocBook. And to put things in perspective, 1990 is when Grolf came out. So, you know, this all happened very recently in kind of the grand scheme of runoff and this sort of thing. And this is also very important we want to keep our noses to, is that DocBook is new compared to the way we've been doing it always. It's kind of the intruder. And it's been a very successful intruder because it happens to exploit our weakness for buzzwords. When I said SGML, I saw some of your eyes widen in admiration. It could have been horror. XML. No? A few, yeah. We need more Linux people in here. The effect is incredible. And then, of course, just a few years later, we're here right now in BSD camp. DocBook, this is going to be awesome. This is a DocBook Unix manual. This is in Type 6 font, and at the last presentation, somebody was like, I don't want to show any DocBook, because I would have to have Type 6 fonts, and I don't want to do that. I'm actually going to show you how horrendous it is. This is, and I'm going to show you what this manual looks like, too. This is a Unix manual in DocBook. And of course, this is the newest DocBook. This is an XML, not SGML. And this is a snippet, the top snippet, as you can see by the brackets. So here we're defining. Oh. Just let me. I need a moment. Here we're defining. No. This. This is the output of this DocBook manual. So, this long, and this is, monotype size 14 or whatever, from this. Now, to be fair, if we were to do the MDoc, which I did also, it does come down to about here. And it's all on the left margin, too, which is nice. And we're, this is a lot of fun to laugh about, but this is a big problem in things like, we were talking about earlier, CVS logs. Yeah. Yeah, okay. So in terms of the length of it, yes, if we're using Grolf. No, they're much bigger than that, because there are also a dozen binaries. Yeah, I mean, specifically. Yeah, but yes, of course. But the purpose of this is a comparison to actually writing it in a language that was explicitly designed for manuals, not from a committee or from O'Reilly, a committee in 1991, but in 1964 by people who actually write code. Of course, maybe they were misguided, but they were misguided in a way that has stayed with us for 50 years. Which is pretty impressive in terms of being misguided, in my opinion. And I was taught as a kid to respect my elders, which I don't do. But in this case, I'll selectively do so. So this is DocBook. We don't have to laugh about it for now. We already did. This is what it looks like here. You can read it if you want. I can't. And this is what it produces. Interestingly enough, DocBook produces man pages in the man formats, as alongside PDF and XHTML, I believe, and a few others. And actually, we had a nice talk right before this about the deficiencies of DocBook in producing exactly those formats. So I'm yet to know what DocBook does well. And this is a serious problem because a lot of people and a lot of BSDs use DocBook a lot. So we're laughing about it, and it's fun to laugh about it, but we're using it at the same time. So be very careful what you're laughing about. You may have to do something in it later. Tech Info I'm really not going to cover. It's used for not really manuals, not really readmes. They're hyperlinked readmes. Tech Info likes to say that they came out before the web. I don't think that that's true. In 1993, saying you came out before the web doesn't seem particularly correct. Although, yeah. So this, but for, in any sense, it's nicely linked. So again, it's a nice big thing, and you know, kind of docbook-ishly, we can see a lot of linking and referencing and this sort of thing. But they're not really for Unix manuals, so I'm not going to cover this in detail. So let's just jump into the good stuff. I promise you some goodies, and because this is the time when people start to fall asleep, this is the perfect time to do the goodies section. So I'm going to talk about Mandoc now. Mandoc, as I said earlier, is the newest incarnation of Rolf clones. What makes it different from the other Rolf clones is that it's not a Rolf clone at all. It's completely different. Its design is different, and the potential for using it is also completely different than the traditional Rolf or off or mom off utilities that exist. Thus far, we've noticed that in the formats, just for you, Claudia, in the formats we've looked at, we have presentation formats like MAM, like the ME. We didn't show examples of ME and MM, but they're the same thing. They say how to color your manuals, how to style them using Comic Sans and this sort of thing. Presentation also is Tech Info because it's, although it's also giving you semantic information for linking, you have the ability to annotate your manuals with bolds and colors and Comic Sans. ProPod also is the same as MAM. You know, we'll just leave it at that. And then there are semantic. Yeah, sort of. I see you shaking your head. It's true, but that's not important right now. We can argue about it later. Semantic manuals say what a particular thing is, whether it's a function name, whether it's a variable name, whether it's an option. This is what you specify when you're doing a semantic manual. MDoc is one of these. DocBook is. Linux book, I assume, is. I didn't actually look at Linux book. I'm sorry. I saw the book part, and I assumed it's going to look at this XML-y stuff. Simplified DocBook is probably the same. But what's important is that these are semantic. So this is a big plus for DocBook, that it does, when you're writing DocBook, you have to say what the things you're writing are and not necessarily how to show them. And I like this as a scientist because when I write a tool, I want to be able to go into data and know what it is and not have to guess, which is what I would have to do with MAM. So this is what makes Mandoc, the tool, different from the Rolf clones, or from the Rolf clones, Dick Rolf clones, Mom Rolf clones, whatever. As a program, when it reads its inputs, it is not transforming it into Rolf, which is a presentation language. It's reading it exactly as you're seeing it, as semantic content. And it's parsing it as a stream of semantic content and not presentation. So we're not actually translating into Rolf at all. We take the MDoc as a language itself. And that's what makes it different, and that's what makes it extremely fast, too. Because we don't actually have to go through the step of taking that .ad macro and translating it into, you know, 40 lines of gobbledygook. We can just go directly and say, all right, this is an author name, this is an address, and put it underneath it. And the effect of that is that we can take this MDoc input and transform it into an abstract syntax tree that has all the information about what the data is. Are we looking at the name of a manual? Are we looking at a function name, a variable name, any of these things? And this is really powerful. We have not been able to do it before. In theory, you can do it with a DocBook, but this is the first time when we have a tool that can do this with our manuals that are realistically in our source tree. Rolf couldn't do it because it threw away all this information when it translated into Rolf. But we keep everything. So this is very nice. By the way, the utility lives at MDocML BSDLV, and this interface that lets us parse manuals is actually in a library, which is documented there. I'll talk about, or Ingo, rather, will talk about this in OpenBSD in the next talk, but this does exist out there. So you can use this as a tool, you can download it, you can play with it, you can do whatever you want, yeah? Oh, this is just, this is actually the tree output. So you can get this output by running ttree after your mandoc, your invocation. So this shows you the syntax tree. And these are the line numbers, I think, and the column numbers of where it parsed it from. So yeah, very, very handy. And it accepts mandoc, mdoc rather, man. So these, both of these formats. So although man is presentation, it can accept it. It will parse a semantic tree that only knows about the presentation. But that's the format's fault, not ours. It also accepts table inputs and rudimentary EQN inputs as well, and lots of raw stuff too. So we actually are able to recognize and then throw away immediately conditionals, loops, all this stuff inside of mandoc itself. And Ingo is going to talk, yeah? Yeah, actually we don't do loops yet. It'll be simple when I get around to it. Ingo is going to talk more about the internals of mandoc and how it does that. It's quite interesting. So now we're going to boast a little about what we can do that nobody else can do. With the semantic content, we can generate all of these things very easily. So by taking these mdoc and man files, we use this binary mandoc, which interfaces with the library. There's the manual for it, by the way, in terms of a link. And we can generate XHTML, HTML, PostScript, PDF, stuff to go out to the terminal. We have a lint mode, and we also have that tree output you saw earlier. Not only do we have HTML, because technically we're off as HTML, we have HTML where you can say, with a CSS style sheet, I want to take all function names and make them blue. And you don't have to use Groff presentation. You can do it with CSS. And you can actually see all sorts of different styles, or I'll show you very soon. Upcoming stuff that I'll show you pictures of is UTF-8 outputs and the notion that if I generate HTML, right now it has Unicode's escapes on it if it has special characters, and there should also be a way to show the US ASCII attenuation, but that's kind of a small thing. Another tool that probably people don't know about, which is the goodie, the big goodie that I'm going to show you, is that we have a search engine for manuals that has been developed, which, unlike a regular search engine where you give it a word and it does some sort of relevance match or page rank or, you know, mom rank or whatever the raw stuff, it actually mines the semantic content of the manuals and is able to say, well, the keyword you look for is a function, it's a variable, it's an author name, it's a standard, and you can search for these things. So you can say, give me all the standards that are linked in manuals that are POSIX 1, or that are 1001B real time, or all the things that Dirat has written, or that Jaeger has written, and I'll show examples of that. Of course, there are very few which he's written. Yeah, I have more, I'm just saying. Or we can do your, but I don't know your name, so. Huh? Yeah, you do. No, yes, you do. Absolutely. Oh, JMC is going to die when you say that. At the what? If it doesn't have an author, it's not in there. Oh, that's true. Section 5 wouldn't have authors in that case. Yeah, all of, and we can get into that later, but you should have an author, the original person who wrote it, if just for archival purposes and knowing who did it in the past. We're going to fight about this later, actually. But and two tools. There are two new tools that that are coming out soon. What is and apropos? So right now, everybody know about apropos and what is? Apropos and what is? It's a Unix command. Yeah, yeah, of course, right. Still thinking about Windows, as usual. How about an apropos that can search for particular types of data, like a function name? I had a, you know, what references stdlib.h? Where is opt-in, for example? All the sort of stuff, you can do that. And the link there takes you to a version. I'll show you a quick demo in a few minutes, if you want, of that working. I have about 4 minutes, so I should start talking really fast. Some other goodies. Nobody knows how to make your makefiles work in a makefile. It seems that this is really totally unknown voodoo, but it's really easy to take manuals, that, you know, your makefile for your program, and integrate your manual so that you can build your manuals, your HTML for your manuals, whatever, as part of your program. I don't know, I said this to somebody earlier and they were very confused by the fact that you can do this. The important thing is that you can check your manuals to see whether they're correct, meaning whether they're going to break. So right now, Groff is not really good when telling you that your manual sucks. So your manual can be completely broken and Groff will just be like, it's okay, man. And it'll try to do the best it can. And Mandoc is, because it's semantic, because it's looking at the macros themselves, will yell at you and die and cry and do all sorts of things. So you can check your manual to make sure it works. It also checks things like compatibility. So if your manual does not work, we know whether it's going to work with Groff and not Airloop Trough. And we can check against these things. Not all of them, but some of them. And here's an example of a generating PDF, HTML with the style sheet, XHTML with the style sheet, just generating the regular old manual page, all sorts of good stuff. So what do we have here? UTF-8. This was actually just completed this morning. Yesterday, during the FreeBSD Doc Summit, we were talking to Sato-san, who said, a problem that we have with Groff is that we write our manuals in Japanese. Now, officially, we usually say that your manuals should always be in English, you're going to balkanize them. And he said, I understand that. He didn't actually say that part, but he said, I understand that. He said, but... Yes, he said that very, very quietly so I couldn't hear it. So I'm sure he said it. And then he said, but we need Japanese manuals because people, don't always speak English, and a lot of our manuals are written in Japanese. Groff, he said, has a major problem with this because they've been promising us UTF-8 output and input in Unicode for about 10 years, and they still haven't done it. And so we took it on upon ourselves to do it yesterday and the day before, and now you can see the results. So Mandoc will be supporting Unicode inputs using special characters in UTF-8 or any sort of outputs. As you can see here we have kanji. I don't know, okay, I don't think anybody here can actually read this, which is good, because it's just... Yes! I just copied the neat-looking symbols. So these symbols looked cool to me, so I liked them, so I just repeated them over and over and over again. I was going to try to find a way to say, like, I'm behind you with a knife. People who could read it be like, ah... But because I didn't think anybody would be able to. But we do and will be merging this very carefully into the system after considering things like how do you do UTF-8 and Unicode and PDF when PDF needs to know the glyph width of fonts. We'll worry about that stuff later. I'm just going to output a question mark probably. And here's the same thing. We have the HTML outputs. Also doing the same thing. And of course, they're the wins are all wrong just because they did it yesterday and haven't fixed these things yet. But suffice to say, Mandoc moves very quickly. If there's something that's missing, it'll get done very quickly. It's not going to take 10 years. Only if at first I say no way in hell. And I think I did say no way in hell with any sort of UTF-8. Ingo, that was a while ago. Yeah, that was like last year when we were talking about we were at the hackathon for Mandoc, and Jörgson and Barry, who does our NetBSD stuff, was there and was talking about UTF-8 input and output. And I said, no way in hell are we ever going to do that. They're only going to be in English. I wouldn't even know how, actually, because I guess you could, I suppose. I don't know how that would work with the kind of standard way of showing things. Yeah, but would we flip everything like around the? No. Oh. I don't see why not. I can see why not in terms of the ASCII, because the ASCII output would take a long time to get this. It's very, very delicate. Is getting the ASCII output in that little window with columns and everything. It's this is like the I'm not going to use the words I usually do. It's the hard part in Mandoc is ASCII output. Changing anything there is like surgery. It's the only part that's hard. Yeah. Yeah. You can probably actually do this with the browser very easily. That doesn't concern me because we just spit out the HTML or XHTML. It would be the console output that I would worry about. It's not. It is reasonable though. It probably. I don't know if I would ever. I don't know if I would ever want to do that. And here it's either going to be more than 2 weeks or less. But I'm still excited with this, so I'll probably want to play with this for a while just to get things like the interface right. But suffice to say. We can do, and you're seeing it right now, we can do UTF-8 to the terminal, we can do it to HTML, and because you can get this, you can search for it using this. So if you go to, let's do this online, right? This would be fun. All right, so if you go to this, can I make it bigger? I can do that forever. Is this good enough? Can we see this more or less? All right, so here we have, this is just a demo, right? And what the demo is using, I think it's using OpenBSD Current as of last week or something like that. I haven't updated. This is not saying that this is a replacement for OpenBSD's referencing at all. This is just a demo. It's just a demo. All right. So what you can do with this, remember earlier I said that you can search for semantic content. So I can, for example, my favorite one is to search for, 2003... What's the name of the standard? They're like IEEE.1 or something. Let's just do this. All right. So let's just search for POSIX. So here we have all of the manuals that reference something that has the word POSIX in it at 1003. So for example, if we want, and this is a regex spring, so I have to do the funny escapes. 1B is the real-time one. And this was just asked about by somebody earlier. So now we can look at all the manual pages, that at least that I crawled for, that reference in their standard section this particular reference. So if we look at this one, for example, here we have MLOC all, and this is in the course section 2. So if we see at the bottom, and what this is grabbing this from, so I use the same example here, is this, as I just showed you, which is actually coming. So in the manual source itself, this is kind of difficult to see, but if you really, really were to squint and be Superman, you could see at the bottom that we have .st is the name of a macro that says insert the name of a standard, and the name of that macro is p1003.1b90, which is the real-time extension of the POSIX. So it can take that, understand what it is because of its semantic content, lift it out from the syntax tree, search through it, and display it quite quickly. So EPUB. I promised you I would show you. This is a Nook. This is actually Will Backman's Nook, or his brother's Nook. He's not here right now. And this displays a FreeBSD manual page, and I think this is the ELF binary format manual page. So this is what we're looking at. Got two examples of this. Yes. So this is actually running on a Nook. This is generated by Mandoc XHTML. And he used, what was the tool he used, do you remember? To put these all together into like an ebook, Caliber or something like this. Yeah, he used that to take the collection of XHTML files and to dump them into an EPUB. And I think he just had to make one change in terms of CSS to make it work properly, because the CSS was, hard-coded, you had widths to make it look like a man page, and those didn't look good on this, because this, for example, would be all the way over here. So we overwrote it with a custom CSS page. So we do EPUB. It's there. It's on a Nook. It looks good. And of course, with the code snippets, it doesn't, because they're fixed, but that's not a problem. I don't know how they would fix that. Code snippets cannot be resized so easily. And, so I have some things to say after this, but before I do, I'd just like to say thank you to the BSD camp organizers, one of them being over there, and probably others. Mandoc contributors. Ingo's going to talk a lot more about all of the contributors from Mandoc. NYCBug and Mr. Dexter's over here because all the servers that run all of BSDLD, which is like several dozen projects, I think, are on these servers in New York City and then Portland. So, a few things before we go about my rage, because I really do get angry at things and then I fix them. So here I'm talking about manuals, the quality of the manuals versus how much I use Google. All right, so with OpenBSD manuals, they're great. I really like them. If I want to find something, it's always there. It's like I'm programmed, as everybody should be. If I want to know what the behavior is of isASCII, I will type man isASCII. I will not go to Google and say, what is the behavior of isASCII? For Linux stuff, I end up doing that quite a lot, which really irritates me. For example, why should I define underscore GNU source to get a function? Nobody explains this in the manuals. It's just written there. So I end up using Google for that, and this does not please me. Something like xlib, I don't even bother looking at the manual pages anymore because, you know, not only do they not look good, so I can't really read through them, they don't really apply to the conventions. Also, they don't say anything. They're like, this is the name of the function. Enjoy. And so I end up looking at Google, and OpenGL, in my experience, is the worst of all of these, because they can't even do the license restrictions, I think, to distribute their manuals. And even if they did, they aren't great, so because there are 1,000 functions, and I have no idea what to do. Yes? Yeah. Yes, okay, this is what I end up looking at, is the original books. And it kind of makes me feel bad that I'm using a system that has Xorg on it, that people have written many xlib programs for, and yet I can't look at the manual for it. It's crazy. So what's important about this Google thing is that you can really relate the quality of a manual as it goes down to the difficulty in doing anything with it. So as that I'm looking at Google goes up, the more crap I'm going to read on Google, which is probably wrong about what I'm trying to do in the first place, and thus my tool ends up breaking also. So it's like a horrible cycle of things that are breaking left and right just because there's no canonical authoritative reference in the first place. And this is really a pat on the back for OpenBSD, and especially for the people like JMC who really work hard to make sure that our manuals look beautiful in terms of what the content is, that it's correct, that it's there, and we agonize over these things too. And we can explain to you just in terms of MDoc, the manuals there, I mean, we've spent hours and hours and hours making sure that they really say everything they need to, so that you're not going on Google saying, how do I write the author name in my manual? And if anybody ever does that, I will know. I mean, I'll feel it. Somewhere far away, I'm going to be like, and then I'll come after you. And so your products end up being bad, and that's nobody likes that. So that's kind of a story, to write good manuals. And the last thing I want to talk about is the submarine, the GNU problem. And I understand that that in attending these doc book kind of tutorials or seminars or whatever, that there's really a quiet problem that nobody wants to really talk about, is that Grof and DocBook, I believe, the newer ones, are GPLv3. Now, from what I understand, people are not upgrading to the newest GCC because it's GPLv3. We don't want that in base. Yet nobody has any problems with the fact that Grof is GPLv3. Nobody really wants to talk about this. But it is. And that's not going to go away. So people say, all right, let's use DocBook to generate our manuals, to write our manuals in. All right? This is great. Unfortunately, DocBook is also GPLv3, and it depends on features of the newest Grof. So in order to have DocBook, the newest DocBook, you need the newest Grof. In order to have the newest Grof, you need GPLv3. So people are going to have to make decisions about what they want to do with their manuals. And, you know, or else there's going to be more and more problems as time goes on. So be very, very wary when using Grof. And this is actually one of the reasons that Mandoc continued to be written, was that Mandoc is ISE licensed. It does not have the GNU problems, and this is kind of the importance of it. So pay attention to this, and that's all. Yeah, it's not C++, it's C, and it's tiny.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's fast. And well documented. I'm not going to go on, but I want to. So does anybody have any last questions? No, I mean anything that was not answered properly? In terms of the CGI, we didn't talk about the future possibilities. Ingo's going to do that, but this is really something to keep in mind, that you can search for particular things semantically. Yes? Mm-hmm. What is Yelp? Yeah. Ah, okay, yeah, they'd have to make that go away and use a real one. It probably is taking the output of that, the formatted output, and just saying, it's taking the source. Ah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the docbook versus mdoc question is actually, we're way over time, by the way, but the docbook versus mdoc question is really important, because they both offer semantic content, and what it comes down to after that is details, and the details are really important in this regard. It's not just licensing, because a format is a format. It's the fact that whenever you use docbook, you need your XML, you know, processor, you need your XSLT, you need the associated things. These all need to be working perfectly. And as many people know who have used docbook, once one of those is out of sync, everything falls apart. You need all of these to be working together. And this is difficult to do in and of itself. But let's pretend in our ideal world that works. What pisses me off the most is the CVS log of docbook. Which, if you ever actually looked at CVS diff for HTML files or whatever, you can't read them. I mean, they're just unreadable. And to somebody like me who uses CVS a lot, this is incredibly important, that I need to be able to read diffs. And I cannot read HTML diffs. And this is, as simple as it sounds, for me, this is a showstopper. Because this, if I want to read the diffs, I'd have to format the HTML all on the left side or whatever. And, I mean, it's a nightmare. So little things like that make a big difference. But the big things are the license, and they're just the brittleness of the tools themselves. And with MDoc, you have not only our tool, which is, you know, very well actively developed and so on and so forth, but you have the traditional ones of those fail that have been around for 40 years, 50 years. Docbook, yeah.
Thank you.
This actually would work quite nicely in a GNOME concept or what any of the big window managers, because they have these plugins for the browser or the file manager, like you can do SFTP or whatever. I mean, I have them, but you know, you SFTP and then you have the name in your browser or whatever it's called, the file browser, and you can read it there. So they should be able to take something like this. It's just a C CGI, to dump it in there and to be able to use it natively, so that when you want to search your own manuals on your own system, you can just use something like this, and they're all pretty HTML and so on and so forth. I don't speak GNOME or KDE or whatever, but it seems like that would be a trivial exercise. So, I don't know. Any other questions? Do you want me to show them again? Then don't ask more questions. Aha! All right. Let's look back at your name here. What's his DHCP? No, that's Thomas Henning. So I'd have to do a... It could be because my script just isn't picking it up. But why? I mean, that seems like it would be critical. It's in the standard. I don't know why JMC isn't yelling at you for that, because he's big on noting things in the author section also.
Well, it's just auto-text.